Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Well, there are some people who absolutely love running, and there are others who flee screaming from the sport. They hate how it feels, they think it's a poor form of exercise because it overly stresses the body, causes tons of injuries, and doesn't even help you lose weight. Are these objections to running true? Well, today I talk with competitive runner Jason Fitzgerald to get his answers. Jason is a USA track and field certified coach and has finished first in marathons and obstacle course races across the country. He's also the owner of Strength Running, a website that provides coaching and programming for long distance runners who want not only to get faster, but become stronger and more durable. And today on the show, Jason and I discuss some of the myths about long distance running that keep people away from the sport, why runners often neglect strength training, like barbell exercises, but they shouldn't, and what programming should look like when first starting out with running, as well as when you want to get more competitive. Whether you're a veteran runner, someone who's made a New Year's goal to train for a 5K or a marathon, or think you don't want anything to do with the sport, you'll find this an interesting show. It's maybe convinced me to put down my barbell now and again and go for a run, maybe. All right, after the show's over, check out the show notes at aom.is/strengthrunning, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Jason Fitzgerald, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you are a long-distance runner, competitive yourself. You also coach other long-distance runners. You have a site called Strength Running. And what I love about your approach to running, you've written content for our site about strength training and running, preventing injuries during running, and obstacle training for obstacle course racing. What I love about you is you emphasize strength training in running, unlike a lot of other, I mean, sometimes I feel like runners just overlook the importance of strength. And we'll get into the details of strength training and how you incorporate that into a running program. But let's do some defense here. Like there's some people who just don't like running, like long distance running. And I'll admit, I'm one of those guys. I like to sprint. I like doing obstacle course racing, but the idea of running, you know, a 10K, a marathon, I'm just like, I don't know if I want to do that. What do you think are some of the reasons that people hate running or think they hate running?
Good question. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say that I didn't always like running either. I was the kid in middle school during track and field week that was throwing the shot put and trying to do, you know, the 100 meter hurdles instead of doing the mile run. I just tried to avoid it at, you know, at every opportunity. But it definitely is a learned passion. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't like running because they don't really give it a chance. You know, just like any sport, it takes a few months to acclimate and get used to it and really become proficient enough at it where every single run is not a struggle. So imagine if you're a strength athlete, Brett, if you go into the gym, someone who's never lifted before, and you try to do a clean and jerk, you probably aren't going to be very good at it. You're probably going to hurt yourself if you put too much weight on there. And it's just really not going to happen. And I think a lot of people take that same principle and try to apply it to running. They go for a couple runs and then they try to run a 5K or a 10K and they realize, wow, this is a lot harder than it seems. And I don't know if I like it. The other thing that I see really, I see it all the time, is that runners try to make running too hard. They don't have a purpose to their training. They're not very strategic. And most of their runs kind of end up being either hard or this kind of moderate effort where they don't have any easy runs. They don't have any recovery runs. And without that kind of balanced approach, they're destined to either get hurt or get overtrained. There's a lot of problems that come with making your running harder than it has to be. And with all that said, I am not in the business of getting people to like running. If you don't like running, that's fine. Go find something that you do enjoy that gets you motivated to get out and exercise and live a healthier lifestyle. But you know, if you're not someone who enjoys running, then you know, first I'd say give it a chance. Let's do it the right way. Let's do it with a proper structure to your training. But you know, at the end of the day, if it's not for you, then that's totally fine.
Yeah, I can admit I'm one of those people that not having a program when I've run in the past, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to go for a jog today. And I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. And I was like, okay, the next time, okay, I'll try to do a little bit faster. Or should I go longer? I have no clue. And the lack of direction really threw me for a loop.
It sounds like me in the gym. So I have this exact same problem when it comes to strength training because, you know, I get in the gym and I don't really like to lift very much. I would so much rather run 10 miles than go in the gym and lift for 45 minutes. So if I'm the same way, if I don't have a program, if I don't really understand why I'm doing what I'm doing, then I'm just going to get in the gym and, you know, kind of randomly do some strength work, but it's not in a systematic way that's really going to help me develop the habit of lifting, just like it's so important to develop the habit of running over, you know, a long period of time. And so I think no matter if you're a runner or if you like to lift weights, you have to have a program and it needs to be a good program.
Well, let's talk about that sort of programming before we get into some of these other questions too. I mean, what does running programming, like what does programming for running look like? Say if you're a beginner, like someone's listening to this, like, yeah, I want to run a 5K. What would programming look like for that?
Now, are we talking about just the running itself or the strength work in addition to that?
Let's talk both. I mean, let's talk about running first and then how you would incorporate the strength training into that.
Sure. Well, I think it all comes down to the level of whatever runner we're talking to. So if this runner is a total beginner, they haven't really gone for any kind of runs in, let's say, 6 months or a year, or in other words, a long time, then, you know, the first real principle of a good training plan is simply developing that consistent habit. They really just need to get into the good routine of going out, let's say 3 times a week for, you know, I would say 20 to 30 minutes. And then after a couple of weeks, you know, we can really start ramping that up and they get into 45 minute runs. And then maybe after 2 or 3 months, they can start getting into, you know, 60 to 90 minute runs. But it has to be done in a progressive way. You know, we can't increase mileage too quickly. We can't introduce too much intensity too quickly. And intensity is really the speed of your runs. And I think a lot of runners try to just go out and, oh, I'm going to run 3 miles and I'm going to try to do it a little bit faster than the run before it. And this isn't really a strategic approach to getting in better shape and improving upon a race time, for example. So the programming for a true beginner is really about consistency with running. And that's it. And the more advanced you are, the more advanced things you can then do. You can get into more complex workouts. You can do long runs. You can do race specific types of long runs where, you know, let's say for the marathon, you're including some goal marathon pace at the end of a 20 mile run. Now that's admittedly very advanced. That's a very advanced thing to do. You know, a new 5K runner isn't going to do something like that. But in terms of general programming, we really want to make sure the runner is starting where they are right now, not where they want to be or not where they used to be, say 10 years ago when they were a teenager or before they had kids and worked long hours. So knowing where you are now and having that level of self-awareness is really critical. And then from there, you just take the next logical step. You know, maybe you increase your mileage by 5 or 10% every 2 or 3 weeks, and you go from there. You just very gradually increase the volume. You tentatively add intensity to the program so that you can really work on not only speed, but also kind of the race-specific endurance that you need to finish a good 5K or 10K.
So it sounds very similar to weight training programming. So you want to have, you want to add that stress, and there's different types of stress. You can add volume or intensity. Volume for weightlifting is the repetitions, intensity is weight. So you have like a volume day where you maybe run long distance, then you might have an intensity day. And then in weight training, you have like a back off day where you might allow yourself to recover. Same principles in running.
Exactly. It's funny. I think we have a mutual friend in Steve Cam, and he runs the site Nerd Fitness. And last year I was a guest instructor at his camp. And it's funny, we had a programming class where I was with two strength athletes and coaches who were talking about how to program for lifting. So this was a powerlifting focus, you know, how to lift more than, you know, you can lift a month ago, for example. And it was almost exactly the same. All the same principles are at play with running that are at play with strength training. You know, it's the stress adaptation cycle. You want to introduce the stress to the body, let the body recover, and then in doing so, it super compensates and allows you to get stronger, faster, with more endurance.
Okay. Well, before we get into the strength training part of training for running, let's talk some of the myths that exist about distance running. One of those that is out there is that people say distance running diminishes muscle mass. And so, like, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to be skinny, sinewy little guy. Like, I want to be strong, want to be fit. Is that true? Does distance running diminish muscle mass?
It certainly can. I mean, distance running is catabolic. So in other words, it breaks down muscle mass. But so does any endurance-oriented form of exercise. So, you know, if you're walking the Appalachian or hiking the Appalachian Trail, that's a catabolic activity. You're probably going to lose muscle mass. The same thing is true for the elliptical or swimming or cycling. So, you know, any endurance sport is really working on the cardiovascular system as opposed to, you know, the muscular side of things. And, you know, most runners really don't even have to worry about this because they're just not really going to lose any muscle mass if they start running. Now, it is problematic for, let's say, runners who are over 40 or those running very high mileage or high intensity running programs. These runners must include strength training in their programming if they want to maintain muscle mass. Now, of course, with that said, I think every runner should include strength training in their running program because the benefits are undeniable. But, you know, those two types of runners have to include some strength training if preserving muscle mass is one of their goals. And more common, it's really that running is going to prevent additional gains in mass. So for, you know, the average 30, 40-year-old guy, you know, you're not going to lose muscle mass if you train for a 10K, for example. Presumably, this type of athlete is also going to continue lifting weights at the gym in addition to any running training that they're doing. They're not going to put on 20 pounds of muscle during that, you know, say, 3-month training period, for example, but, you know, they're not going to lose muscle mass. And I think for the runners who are trying to combine two opposing goals, like say gaining 10 pounds of muscle and training for a marathon, then, you know, we're kind of in a situation where, you know, your goals are at odds with each other and you're probably going to fail at both. So it's definitely something that I think should concern older runners, and it should concern particularly older runners who are more competitive, because more competitive athletes are going to tend to run higher mileage. They're going to have more intensity in their training program. So these are the runners that are most at risk for actually losing muscle mass and potentially getting injured because of that. So for those groups, it's definitely more important to include more traditional strength training, say lifting in the gym.
So, you know, again, like, this goes back to your whole website, strength running. You're a big proponent of runners incorporating strength training into their running programming. Why do you think most runners shy away from weights, though? I mean, I know a lot of runners, and a lot of them just, it doesn't interest them. They're just incorporating and putting in the miles. But why do you think those runners shy away when they might stand to benefit from strength training?
Yeah. Well, I think the number one reason is that runners like to run. They don't like to lift. And I'm such a great example of that. Even though my wife jokes around and calls me a core whore because I'm always doing some strength, you know, body weight strength work, I don't really like to go to the gym. Like I said, I'd rather go run 20 miles than spend an hour lifting weights in the gym. But, you know, I think, you know, there's this misconception that runners don't lift. Well, runners who don't train properly don't lift. And if you're programming smart training for runners, you're definitely going to include some strength training there. You know, if you look at, you know, why more specifically runners don't lift, I think it's just an ignorance of proper training. And, you know, if runners understood the long list of benefits from strength training, then they're definitely going to include it in their program if they want to become a better runner.
And what are the benefits of strength training for a runner?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, the benefits of strength training for runners are enormous. And if you're a runner and you are getting in the gym, say, once or twice a week to do some weightlifting, you're including also some more runner-specific bodyweight exercises, you're going to have a faster finishing kick. So this is how fast you're able to actually finish a race. Your form is going to be more economical. In other words, you're going to be more efficient. And use less energy to maintain the same pace. Your recovery from long runs and fast workouts is going to be faster. You're going to have higher testosterone, and your risk of a repetitive stress injury is going to be dramatically lower. So, you know, any runner who listens to that and then says, I'm not going to lift weights, is doing themselves a disservice.
So what does a strength training program look like for running? I mean, what sorts of exercise should a runner be doing?
Great question. And I think the basics work the best. You know, squats, deadlifts, those are probably the two best exercises for runners. And then, of course, there's many different variations on those that you can do in the weight room. I think, you know, when it comes to programming strength training for runners, you know, I think you need to look at it in two different ways. There's number one, more traditional strength training. And that's, I think, what people think of when they think of strength work. This is lifting weights, doing squats, doing deadlifts, really racking up the weight and trying to lift heavy. And for distance runners, you know, there's also this weird misconception that I don't understand, that runners are going to get in the gym and they're going to lift for 15 or 20 repetitions because they're lifting for endurance. They want muscular endurance. But the problem is, we get enough muscular endurance from running. You know, we're running all the time. We don't need extra muscular endurance from lifting. What we do need is power. What we do need is strength. And we get that from lifting heavy weights. So when you see runners in the gym, they should be doing squats and deadlifts and other strength exercises that are, you know, they're basic, fundamental, multi-joint compound movements, but they also should have relatively heavy weight on there depending upon, you know, the athlete's weight and ability and kind of absolute strength. But those are the kind of the best strength and power exercises for runners. Now, most runners, if they're ready to jump into a program like that, you know, twice a week, I think, is a good baseline for how many times they should be lifting in the gym. But then in addition to that, and this is the other side of things, this is really the more injury prevention and more postural stability side of things. And that's where we get into runner-specific strength exercises. And here there's a lot of core work. And of course, core does not mean just your abs. It's, you know, I like to say it's from your knees to your nipples. It's everything from your hip flexors to your hips, your glutes, your hamstrings, your obliques, your lower back. So it really does encapsulate the entire trunk of a runner. And that postural stability is really important for injury prevention, mainly because, you know, most injuries happen because runners get tired. And when they're tired, their running form falls apart. And when your running form falls apart at the end of a race, at the end of a long run or fast workout, that's when you develop all these abnormal movement patterns and you become a lot less efficient. And that's when you start running in a certain way that really predisposes you to overuse injuries. And so in addition to kind of avoiding what I would call the three twos, which is doing too much mileage at too fast a pace too soon before you're ready for it, you know, trying to develop more postural stability is going to really help with injury prevention. So going back to frequency, if you're lifting twice a week in the gym, then you should also be following all of your other running sessions with, you know, I would say about 15 minutes of more runner-specific bodyweight strength exercises. And I have, you know, an easy way for runners to remember to do this is to remember that every run should be sandwiched between a dynamic warm-up and a runner-specific core or strength routine. And then in addition to that, you would go to the gym twice a week and say, you know, lift more traditional weights with more traditional exercises.
So it's kind of an idea, it's trying to lay this out big picture. So it'd be like you'd run Monday, Wednesday, Friday, then Tuesday, Thursday, you're in the gym lifting?
Sure, that schedule works.
Okay. I mean, and so is that enough? Is like Monday, Wednesday, Friday enough for running? Because I know some people, like, they do it every day.
Well, that's a good question. And it really depends on your definition of enough. If you want to finish your local 5K in a month, then sure, that's enough. But, you know, if you want to see what you're capable of, if you want to see what your potential might be as a runner, then, you know, the general principle of run as much as you can holds true in this situation. So if you are trying to become a competitive runner, if you want to run at the college level and compete at university, if you want to be an age grouper and win age group awards or, you know, try to win some local races, then, you know, the more you can run, the better runner you're going to be. Now, with that said, the more that you run, the more important strength work becomes, because it's almost like it's balancing out the catabolic effects of high mileage. So yes, it can be very dangerous if you're running 100 miles a week or something crazy like that, and you're not doing any strength work because you're way more predisposed to injuries. But if you're running a lot, then you have to be in the gym. You have to be doing some body weight work. If for you to stay healthy, it's absolutely critical.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a thoroughly modern design. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, and the interior is built with robust materials and integrity. The Defender capability is legendary, whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions. The Defender 110 lets you go further and do more. It's built for the modern explorer. They've got lots of cargo space, so you've got plenty of room for your gear. They also have powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system that keeps you connected. And they have an innovative camera technology system that delivers unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. It is ready for a wide range of adventures. The Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. A vehicle made to go further, the Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. So I got a tree from Fast Growing Trees. I had a tree in my front yard that had to cut down, a big giant oak tree, because it died, and I wanted to put a maple tree there, one that turned bright red during the fall. So I found that tree, made sure that it fit the climate that we're at here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, ordered it. A few days later, I got the tree in a box. It's crazy they can send a tree in a box. And I planted it. A few weeks after I planted it, it's already starting to sprout leaves. So I think in a few years, I'm going to have that bright red maple tree that happens in the fall. I'm really looking forward to that. So if you want to try Fast Growing Trees out, this spring they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off with their first purchase when using code MANLINESS at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code MANLINESS at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MANLINESS. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. There's a famous Abraham Lincoln quote that goes something like, "Good things come to those who wait." But that's only part of the quote. The full quote is, "Good things come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle." Well, if you're a business owner and want the best people on your team, the same applies. Thankfully, ZipRecruiter puts the hustle in your hiring, so you can find qualified candidates fast. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter smart technology finds top talent for your roles right away. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's matching technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Let ZipRecruiter give you the hiring hustle you need. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/manliness to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So let's talk about another criticism levied at in distance running, and that it's, you know, it causes, you know, the body an unhealthy amount of inflammation and stress. I mean, there's been these studies, you know, people who just keel over, who look, you know, completely healthy, they look in shape, but after a marathon they just keel over from a heart attack, and then come to find out they just had so much inflammation. What's the thing behind that idea, and what's your response to that claim?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that we can talk about this. The thing with the issue about runners, you know, dying at a marathon, that is, I think anytime you have 30 to 40,000 people competing in a grueling event, and the marathon is grueling, you know, there's no doubt about it. It's 26.2 miles. You're running on concrete or asphalt. It's very jarring on the body. You know, the studies have shown that the deaths from marathon running are really because, not because of the event itself, but because of, you know, abnormal defects in that runner's particular heart. So when they get to a level where they're very stressed at mile 23 or 25 of marathon, that's when issues start to happen with their heart. But when it comes to inflammation, it's true. Running does produce inflammation. But I think it's helpful to know that any hard exercise is going to produce inflammation. And it's not necessarily bad. Inflammation is actually necessary for that whole adaptation process. If you want to become a stronger strength athlete, you want some inflammation, because if there was no inflammation, your body would not get as strong or as fast. Now, unhealthy amounts of inflammation usually occur much more often when you're running either very high mileage or high intensity, or both, with insufficient recovery. So, you know, and this isn't necessarily specific to runners. You know, if you try to play 5 games of ultimate frisbee every day for a week, or you participate in the CrossFit games, you're going to experience an unhealthy amount of inflammation. That's just kind of the nature of hard exercise. But when it comes to runners, you know, it kind of gets to the fact that most runners are not training appropriately. You know, you look at, you know, I think there's this straw man argument that, you know, is kind of popular in the CrossFit world, that runners are weak. They're all on the treadmill every day, just running for 45 minutes or an hour at this kind of medium, moderate intensity. Well, that's just not how runners should be training. And you're never going to find a high school or a college cross country or track team training that way. You're never going to find a professional runner training that way. And I think if we all trained more like college level athletes or professional athletes, scaled back, of course, then we'll all be healthier with normal levels of inflammation that prompt that adaptation process and help us become better. But at the same time, you know, we need to make sure that we're recovering properly if we're training really hard, and we're doing everything we can to minimize unhealthy levels of inflammation, while also recognizing that inflammation, to a certain degree, is our friend. It's what helps us get faster.
Right. So, I mean, you kind of touched on injuries a little bit, but another reason people shy away from running is that the injury, like they're afraid to get into the, you know, the bum knee, the, you know, the hamstrings, they pull a hammy. Does running have a pretty high injury rate? And if so, what are the most common injuries to running? And I think you mentioned the exercise you can do to prevent that, but anything else that people can do to prevent those types of injuries?
Right. So unfortunately, the injury rate is pretty high among runners. You know, some studies put it at roughly 70% of runners will get hurt this year and every year. And that's enormous. I mean, that's higher than professional football. And so I think there's a lot of reasons for that. So number one is probably because running is an impact sport and it does require some skill. And most people think that it's easier than that. So, you know, people who are just getting into the sport of running they train in unsafe ways, and it leads them to fall victim to those 3-2s that I mentioned before: running too much, too soon, too fast. So I think training errors is the number one reason why runners get hurt, because you know they think that running is much more simple and easier than it really is. The other reason is that runners, you know, we tend to be type A people. You know, we don't listen to our body. If we're sore or if something, you know, we have a little niggle or something's bothering us, we're very goal-oriented. And we look at, you know, that 10K that we're training for next month, or the fact that we're chasing a Boston Marathon qualifying time. And we know that if we take 3 days off from training, that's going to compromise our fitness and we might not reach our goals. So we try to push through things even when we shouldn't. And I think this is such a big mistake that I see all the time. You know, it's funny, you know, I'm a running coach and I think a lot of people see my job as, you know, the boot camp instructor. I'm yelling at everyone, do another lap, let's go faster. Where in fact, a big part of my job is reining runners in, telling them that it's okay to take an extra day off. It's okay to cut a workout short. It's fine. We must listen to our body and really calm down a little bit and not push ourselves so hard. And then, of course, the other part of it, and you know, this resonates with me, is that runners tend to dislike strength training. And strength training is a perfect complement to running, and it very much is included in smart training for runners. So, you know, I think if you combine all these things together, runners who aren't strength training, they're very goal-oriented, so they don't listen to their bodies as much, and you know, they kind of think that running is easy, so they just kind of run, and I'm going to run 30 minutes, and then next week I'm going to run 60 minutes, and next thing you know, they're running way too much before they're ready for it. You know, that's why the injury rate is really high. So it's a big issue, but I think if runners were to structure their training a little bit more intelligently, add in some strength work, and listen to their body, the injury rate would be far lower than it currently is.
Does running form have any role in that as well, the injury rate?
Yeah, it does. Running form is definitely important. I think what we've learned in the last, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years of research is that it's not as important as we thought. You know, I think, you know, Born to Run, the, you know, kind of famous running book that came out in about 2009 or 2010, it got everyone to think about running form, and it really pushed a lot of people to run in either very minimalist shoes or even try some barefoot running. But, you know, I think what we learned from that is that, you know, the pendulum swung way to the side of minimalist shoes and really focusing on that element of form, which demonized heel striking. And now we're learning that, well, heel striking isn't necessarily bad. The problem is if you're an aggressive heel striker who's also overstriding. And overstriding is when you land a lot further ahead of the rest of your body. And ideally, you would land directly underneath your body. So underneath your hips, underneath your center of mass. And if you do that, it's really hard to overstride, and it's really hard to aggressively heel strike. And so if runners reduce their overstriding, and in addition to that, increase their cadence, which is the number of steps that you take per minute, to, you know, I would say roughly 170 or more while they're running at an easy effort, then that's going to take care of almost every running form flaw that is common among runners.
It seems like the cadence could be helped by strength training again. It's a power issue. I mean, I feel like if you had more power, you could increase that cadence a little bit faster. Am I wrong in thinking that?
Good question. And I'm not sure either way. Cadence is really, you know, a lot of runners struggle with increasing their cadence because, you know, they just end up running faster. And one of the best ways to kind of increase your cadence while at the same time running the same pace. So let's say you're running 9 minutes per mile and you realize your cadence is 155 steps per minute. Well, you can set a treadmill for 9 minute mile pace and then play with your cadence. You're not going to be able to run faster than that pace unless you kind of plow straight through the treadmill. And that's a really good way to do it. But Brad, I'm not actually sure if strength training has a direct effect on your cadence.
Okay. Well, that's a great, that was kind of a mind twerp to get my mind around. Cause like your cadence is different from your pace. And that's, it's kind of hard to, you think if you increase your cadence, you're actually increase your pace. But that's what most people want to do when they increase their cadence.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. If you, the opposite side of taking more steps per minute is taking longer steps. And so there's really only two ways to run faster. You take faster steps or you take longer steps. Now, a lot of people try to take longer steps by reaching out in front of them and then they're overstriding, they're heel striking. That's not how we want to do it. How we want to lengthen our stride is to impart more force into the ground. And if you're doing that, then you're going to have a longer stride because your swing phase is going to be longer. So your trail leg is going to swing behind your body. If you have good hip extension, then you know that's a really nice movement. And you're going to cover a lot more ground with every single stride that you take. And strength training will help with that. So if you're doing heavy squats in the gym, then you're much more likely to have a more powerful stride. And that's one of the reasons why heavy weightlifting is able to give you a faster finishing kick. You're able to recruit more muscle fibers so that, you know, when it comes to actually draw upon those muscle fibers, you can use them to run faster.
So a lot of people take up running to lose weight, lose, drop some fat, but you see plenty of runners out there who've been running for months, who still got the gut, right? The little panza. That's how you say it in Spanish. What's going on there? Why is it that you can be just running just every single day, but you're not able to drop the fat or drop the weight?
Right. I mean, I think you can find out of shape looking people who are involved in running and strength training, cycling, whatever. It's not, I don't think, specific to running itself. And the reason is because running is not a cure-all. You know, if you can be a runner and also be overweight. Diet is a lot more important than exercise when it comes to weight loss. And there's also this weird trend in the running world where, you know, you have these recreational runners who, you know, they run a local 5K. So, you know, they're loading up on pasta the night before. They're having, an energy bar and a bagel before their 5K. And then afterwards, they're going to have a Gatorade, treat themselves to a cookie. Of course, maybe the race is giving away even more bagel, so they have another bagel. Next thing you know, in a 12-hour window, this person has had 800 grams of carbohydrate and they've only run 3.1 miles. So there's definitely runners who treat themselves to way more processed carbohydrates than they should. And that's a big contributor to the fact that running is not necessarily going to slim you down because diet is a much more prominent factor in weight loss. Yeah. The other issue I think is just inactivity. So, you know, you might run 40 miles a week, say, but if you're spending the rest of your time sitting down, then you might still be soft. You also have to live just an active lifestyle and not just be totally sedentary for the other 23 hours of a day when you're not running.
So let's talk about diet a bit, because that's sort of, there's been a lot of discussion about that, the best diet for distance runners. You have Mark Sisson, who's advocating, you know, high fat diets, like very little carbs. And then there's that idea that, no, you need to carbo load, like your body needs glycogen or glucose to like fuel these long distance runs. So what's your approach to dieting and running training?
Yeah, so really, I think it's not necessarily an either or discussion. You can do both. You can, of course, eat a low carbohydrate diet if you're not running very much. But, you know, carbohydrate is fuel and it is the body's preferred fuel source. You're not going to find any world-class runners eating a paleo diet. When you get to, you know, 100-mile ultramarathon runners, you might find some at the world-class level who are experimenting with a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet. But that's because the intensity level of an ultramarathon at that level is so low, and you don't use as much percentage of carbohydrate at that level. So, you know, it lends itself more to that kind of an approach. But for the average person, not only does it take, you know, at least 6 months or so to adapt to the high fat, low carbohydrate diet, but you know, it's kind of a difficult transition. You're going to be cranky. It's like giving up coffee. You know, the human body prefers carbohydrate. It is, you know, the glucose is the preferred fuel source for the brain. It's the preferred fuel source for any high intensity exercise. And I think it all comes down to a runner's goals. So if you're running very low mileage, if you're running not necessarily a very high intensity program, then high fat, low carbohydrate diet might work really well for you. Now, if you're a marathoner, if you're running relatively high mileage, then carb loading is going to be very beneficial, particularly for the race itself. Carb loading has been shown to increase performance. There have been, you know, some researchers in Britain followed several, I think it was 200 London marathoners from a few years ago. And they found that the runners who carb loaded the most ran the fastest, and those that didn't carb load ran the slowest. And so it was this very clear trend with carbohydrate consumption and your overall finish time. And I think when it comes to, you know, just, you know, overall diet for distance runners, you know, it's about fundamentals. It's about, you know, the basics, whole foods, less processed foods, and, you know, try to avoid refined sugars as much as you can, and really about balance. You know, you don't want to have meals that are strictly carbohydrate, because then you're going to be hungry an hour later. You want to, you know, try to include the major macronutrients in your program, in your eating program, because that's going to leave you fuller for longer. It's more healthy all around. And I think it's going to be better for not only your performance, but also for your recovery too.
It kind of piggybacking off this idea of, you know, carbohydrates versus fat. You know, there's a lot of advocates out there. I think Chris McDougall, Mark Sisson, they say, you know, the high fat diet is great for aerobic because cardio or running is an aerobic activity. And so they promote this, we've had both on the show to talk about this. They promote the idea, it's this heart rate running, right? Where you try to keep your heart rate beneath 180 minus your age, I think is what it is. And when you do that, it ends up like you end up running really, really slowly. But the idea is that's how you stay in aerobic phase where you're burning fat and not carbohydrates. What's your take on that approach to training, that heart rate monitor training?
Yeah, so this sounds very similar to the Maffetone method, which
Maffetone, that's what it is.
Yeah, so you essentially put on a heart rate monitor, and for, you know, an extended period of time, maybe it's a month, maybe it's 3 months, whenever you go running, you don't exceed that heart rate. And I have a couple issues with this approach, because no major coach advises spending that much time only training the aerobic system. There's a lot of other systems, you know, there's the anaerobic system, there's the lactic system, and to be a good runner, to be a well-rounded runner, you really need to make sure that you have every element in your training. And of course, during the many phases of training, whether you're in recovery mode or you're trying to peak for a race, you're in the middle of a competition phase of training, or you're early in base training, you know, the focus is on different things. But that doesn't mean that you totally eliminate any of the essential aspects of training. So you're never going to not do easy runs. But at the same time, no distance runner should ever get too far away from never running really fast. So, you know, almost at the peak of their top speed. Now, with that said, it doesn't need to be a really hard workout. You could just do, you know, four strides after an easy run where, you know, you get up to 95 or 98% of your maximum speed, but you get a full recovery. You know, they're not even difficult. They're just, you know, a drill almost in how you practice turnover and foot speed. So, you know, I think it's interesting in theory, but in practice, you don't see any elite runners do it. And I think that's the ultimate litmus test. If elite runners are not doing what these kind of more general theorists are prescribing them to do, then it means it doesn't work. If it was working, then you would have the best runners in the world doing the most, you know, forward-thinking training that is being proposed. But you don't see that happen. You know, you see runners who are, you know, running 80% of their mileage at that easy effort, but then 20% of their mileage is fast. It's hard. And you kind of need that balance to reach your potential. And if you don't, then, well, you're really just not going to get as fast as you would if you followed a more intelligent training approach.
All right. Well, Jason, we covered a lot in this conversation. But there's a lot more for people to learn. Where can people learn more about your work and what you do?
The best place is strengthrunning.com. This is where, you know, just like the Art of Manliness, we have a blog, we have a podcast, a lot of different resources for runners. I try to really focus on helping runners stay healthy long term, because that injury rate, like we discussed, is just so astronomically high. And, you know, if we can, you know, get runners to stay healthy and prevent those injuries, then they're going to be able to train like gangbusters and really become better runners than they ever thought. So strengthrunning.com is probably the best option, but I'm on Instagram and Twitter for those social media folks. What is my handle? JasonFitz1. Unfortunately, my name was taken. So there we go.
Awesome. Well, Jason Fitzgerald, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
My guest today was Jason Fitzgerald. He is a USA Track and Field certified coach and the owner of Strength Running. You can find out more information about Jason's work at strengthrunning.com. Also, check out the show notes at aom.is/strengthrunning, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. Our show is edited by Creative Audio Lab here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you have any audio editing needs or audio production needs, check them out at creativeaudiolab.com. As always, we appreciate your continued support. Reviews on iTunes and Stitcher helps out a lot. Until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah. Of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah. That happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.